Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the hope of the Arab Spring has turned to a furious Egyptian fall in Tahrir Square. Protest leaders are now calling for a million-man march today, though they're not getting nearly that many people, to demand that the military hand over power to civilian rule after 24 protesters have been killed by police and the military in recent days. The cabinet has already offered to resign, and all this just ahead of the first post-Mubarak elections scheduled for Monday. Let's try to make sense of it with Stephen Cook, Middle East expert at the Council on Foreign Relations. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to WNYC. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, Brian.
How are you?
With these historic elections coming on Monday, what are the protesters protesting?
Well, the protesters are saying that they are finishing the revolution that they began in January and February that was thwarted by the military when they stepped in to run the country. They want to see an end to military rule and an actual change in the country. Most of what you're getting from the protesters now is that they don't care about the elections that are scheduled for Monday, that these elections are illegitimate. What would be the point of sitting in parliament as long as the military continues to run the political system? So they have come out in large numbers demanding change.
And is that true? Is it predetermined that the military would continue to run the political system regardless of the outcome of the elections?
Well, the military's goal has been to set up a system in which they can recede to the background but remain overall authority and influence in the political system. One of the causes of these protests was a series of supra-constitutional principles that the military has floated that would enshrine an influential place for the military in the country's new constitution. This is something to which many activists, many of the instigators of the uprising in January and February, and many Egyptians did not want to see. And we're seeing that play out right now in Tahrir Square.
One of the developments today is that the cabinet has offered to resign over these killings, I guess. But who does that mean would be in charge? And would that strengthen or weaken the military?
Well, the protesters did not demand that the cabinet resign. I think what the problem is right now is that the military is engaged in furious negotiations with different political parties and leaders to find someone who's willing to be the prime minister. The longer this goes on, it demonstrates that the military is losing its grip. No one would want to serve under the circumstances in which the civilian government up until now has been serving, hammered between public opinion that wants change and a military that has been working very hard to salvage what it could of the previous political order.
Listeners, any questions or comments about the Egypt situation as it unfolds today? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our politics website. It's a free country. .org or to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, but call us up 212-433-9692 if you want to say anything or ask anything of Middle East expert Stephen Cook about the situation in Egypt. In February, Stephen, the protesters wanted the ouster of Hosni Mubarak by name. Is there a name we should know here who runs the military arm of the government who they want to resign now?
Field Marshal Hussein Tantawi, who was the Minister of Defense, now is the head of the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. He has been the face of the Supreme Council, and they are demanding that he go. But at the same time, they're saying his departure would be symbolic. They want to dismantle the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. If Lieutenant General Semi Anen, the Chief of Staff, who's the number two on the Supreme Council, were to assume Tantawi's seat, that would not be good enough. The protesters want a civilian government. They want steps towards a more democratic and open Egypt.
Is Tantawi a Mubarak appointee?
Indeed. Tantawi, not someone who is widely popular among his fellow officers. He came to Mubarak's attention in the early 1990s because he provided security for the Mubarak family. And importantly, did not have any political ambitions. This was the reason why he was elevated to the position that he has been. Hardly a charismatic figure, someone who has been willing to do Mubarak's bidding over the course of these many years.
Peter in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Peter.
Yeah, hi. I had a question and a comment. I had heard that the Obama administration had called for restraint on both sides. And is that accurate? If it is, I had a comment.
Indeed, it is accurate. Yesterday, the State Department spokesperson made a statement calling for restraint on both sides.
Well, my comment is I think that's completely outrageous. When you have a military government that's killing people in the streets, I saw a report last night by a journalist who'd gone to the morgue and seen something in the high 20s bodies, most of them killed by gunfire. When you've got a military government that's tried more people in military courts than Mubarak ever dared to do, I think it's something over 10,000. It's pretty clear to me where the aggression and violence is coming from, and I think if you're calling for restraint on both sides and continuing to give military aid to Egypt, the U.S. is on the wrong side. I think it's time to cut off that aid.
Peter, thank you. Why that language of moral equivalence, if that's what it is, from the Obama administration?
Well, let me just say that I agree with Peter 100%. The notion that there is a moral equivalence here when protesters are being bombarded with tear gas, and live ammunition and rubber bullets, and there are, the official count is 33 dead and 1,700 injured, although people suspect that that is much higher than that. The notion that the United States, which has been a patron of Mubarak and now had developed a relationship with the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, are calling on both sides to demonstrate restraint is, quite frankly, doesn't conform to the facts and is outrageous, and it caused outrage in Tahrir Square. I think the problem is for the Obama administration is something that they confronted early on in the January and February uprising, which is they don't know which way this is going to go. And as a result, they are trying to split the difference. There has been the signals coming out of the administration suggest that there really has not been a coherent Egypt policy, not for lack of trying. This is a very difficult, unprecedented situation, and there are differences of opinion within the administration over how to have proceeded over the course of the last 9 months. This is all now coming home to roost. It seems that the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces is on the ropes, and the fact that the United States has called for restraint on both sides, it clearly places us on the wrong side of people who want to live in a more democratic and open society. The real problem is that the administration has worked to position Washington on the side of Arabs who want change, and statements like this just don't help.
Stephen Cook, Middle East expert from the Council on Foreign Relations, as we talk about the unfolding events in Egypt, continuing large protests in Tahrir Square, military shootings of protesters. The official count, as I know it as of earlier today, was 23 dead in the last few days. The elections, the post-Mubarak elections coming on Monday, now in doubt. And Shlomi in Maplewood, you're on WNYC. Hello, Shlomi.
Hi, guys. My question is, do we feel that this uprising and these protests really come from the people, or is it the Muslim Brotherhood that is trying to delay the election so they can put themselves in a position to win an election further down the road?
Right. Thank you. And, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood, part of the people. But how specifically? I think it's the opposite. The Muslim Brotherhood stood to gain by these early elections if they are held as scheduled on Monday. But, Stephen, what do you think?
Well, that's precisely the case. And, in fact, with the tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people who are out in the streets today, there is not a large Muslim Brotherhood presence, an official Muslim Brotherhood presence. There are clearly members of the Brotherhood out there, but as an organization, they have not turned out. They did not call on their members to turn out for this. The early elections were clearly going to benefit the Islamist parties, particularly the Brotherhood's Freedom and Justice Party, because over the course of the last 9 or 10 months, they've demonstrated that they are the most organized and best resourced of all of these parties.
In fact, I wonder how deep the rift may be, if rift is the right word, between leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood and rank and file at this point. Because, you know, many Muslim – I mean, it's a Muslim country, and many who identify with the Muslim Brotherhood are outraged at the military. And I read in the New York Times today that leaders of the Brotherhood, which does lead in this pre-election polling, were holding back from joining the protests because of exactly what you said. They fear the scene will wind up delaying the elections, which could hurt their chances as other parties get more of a chance to organize. But the Times reported that one of the Brotherhood's leaders was chased by protesters out of Tahrir Square yesterday. They were angry about his self-serving call for restraint.
That's exactly right. He was apparently beaten and chased from the square. There is a developing rift between the Brotherhood's guidance counselor and senior leadership and others. In fact, you've seen splits. Younger brothers in their 20s and 30s have broken off and built their own party called the Egyptian Current. Other senior leaders of the Brotherhood who disagree with the guidance council have moved on to pursue their presidential aspirations without the Brotherhood itself. I had an opportunity to sit with younger members of the Brotherhood. These are people in their 30s and 40s who had been out on the front lines of the uprising in January and February, who expressed that although they owed much to the Brotherhood as an organization, that that experience of being out in Tahrir Square had created a wedge between themselves and their leadership, because they felt greater solidarity with the liberal, the Coptic woman, the leftist, who they fought alongside with in the January and February uprising, rather than their leaders who were telling them to do things that did not conform to their new reality.
Let's take a phone call from an Egyptian-American, Waleed, calling from Dubai. Waleed, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're listening in Dubai, huh?
I'm a New Yorker, so it's hard to stay away.
I'm really glad.
That's true.
I'm Egyptian-American, and, you know, my sister's in the square right now, and I just had a comment. I think in the end, you know, over the past few months, the army has simply been playing a game of political chicken with the populace and trying to wrangle and hold on to as much power as possible. But I think in the end that they are, just like they made a self-serving decision to let Mubarak go, that in the end they're going to back off and not go the way of Syria, because in the end that's going to be not in their self-serving interest as well. And I think over the past few days, just before the violence peaked, they showed cracks where they withdrew their proposed amendments in terms of being exempt from the Constitution, et cetera.
Stephen?
I think Waleed makes a very good point that the military is most concerned about the cohesion of the armed forces. And we are starting to see reports, and one that was just before we came on from Al Jazeera, showing pictures of a pretty senior officer who had joined protesters in the square. So there is the possibility that the military will seek a way out. And my supposition is that the negotiations that are going on right now between the military and the political parties in search of a new prime minister or in search of a national salvation government is a way out for the military. This is the way militaries all over the world have gotten out of politics. They've run into trouble. They have, as Waleed pointed out, played chicken with the populace. They have sought to engineer political outcomes and political institutions that serve their interests. The population no longer accepts that, and they run into trouble. And the military, in order to save the armed forces as an institution, negotiates its way out of power. Let's hope that that's what's happening. I don't think that the Syria outcome is likely in Egypt. More likely, Tantawi, Lieutenant General Semi Annan, the Chief of Staff, and others are looking for a way out.
Waleed, what's the last thing you heard from your sister? How recently?
Just a few hours ago. I think things were, you know, there's still more people streaming into the square, and you know, despite the threat of violence overall, there's still perhaps a resurgence of some of the feelings that happened earlier this year when the first revolution broke out. And I think over the past few months, there was perhaps more of a lackadaisical attitude. And I think perhaps, the people have sort of woken up again.
Thank you so much for calling us from Dubai, Waleed. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Stephen Cook, Middle East expert for the Council on Foreign Relations. Just before you go, do you think there are implications for other countries from what's happening today in Tahrir Square? Of course, Egypt inspired other protesters to rally for democracy around the region in the winter and the spring. What are the outside ramifications of what's happening today?
I think it goes without saying, Egypt, a country of 81 million people, one in four Arabs are Egyptian. The fact that Egyptians first brought down Mubarak and now are rising up against the military, which has been the backbone, the founders, defenders of this regime that came into being in the 1950s, if they manage to bring down the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, I think it will reverberate throughout the Middle East and will shake other countries as well.
Stephen Cook, Middle East expert at the Council on Foreign Relations. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, StoryCorps founder David Isay, 2 days before Thanksgiving, invites your stories of thanks for the best teacher you've ever had. Anybody want to give thanks to the best teacher that you've ever had, or for that matter, that your kid has ever had? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can start calling now with your Thanksgiving tributes to the best teacher that you've ever had, and we'll hear some great clips to that effect from the StoryCorps booth. Stay with us.